Okay, welcome to Tanya, Wide Open at G4, chapter 7, 8, something like that, but we never talk about Tanya anyway, so. Okay, we're in the middle of, for everybody just join us, we're in the middle of a discussion right now, so I just thought I'd turn it on. Okay, so, Yerachmiel has been learning Sichas at the Rebbe for how long?
5 years.
5 years, yeah? But without any real serious exploration of Tanya, Bichlal, basically.
No.
Zero?
I mean, I did once year the Tanya cycle.
Okay, so the way, so that's the thing is, the Tanya, there's the Chitas, avoid of Tanya, yeah? Which is a big, that's a lot to do, so you go very quickly, yeah? What happened about 35 years ago on the 200th anniversary of the writing of Tanya was Rav Manis Friedman recorded a set of classes called Tanya 200, which is a shiur outside. If you had the safe with you and driving nuts, it's 53 classes between about 25 minutes to 29 minutes each. Yeah, with huge amounts of chazara like built in, and just giving over the ideas. So before I bumped into those classes, I had learned Sefer Tanya all the way through twice with a Rebbe at my yeshiva, about Shiva Yeshiva in Beit Shemesh. I'd gone through the whole Sefer twice. I literally got nothing. Every now and again, the Rebbe would bring a few things, like, and he would tie it into Lakuta Moran, and then he would explain something from Lakuta Moran, and you'd get something. But from the actual Sefer itself, I literally extracted, I walked away with nothing. I went through it twice, yeah? Then I listened to these tapes all the way through, and I don't know what happened, but I was just like, this needs serious investment of time. I went back again and again. I think I listened 6 times to like 25 hours of classes, 6 times all the way through. Yeah, I was listening to them on high speed. And then that was what began my journey of Tanya, because from those classes, I got a big picture. So now, Yerachmiel, after having learned all of these sichas from the Lubavitcher Rebbe, how have you found these 53 classes that he just got through the whole set? How do you feel about that?
How do I feel about what?
Just what are you feeling about the fact that you've invested? You invested 25 hours into listening to these classes.
I mean, it was. I couldn't believe every time I would listen to it. Like, some of the shiurs totally went over my head, but the ones, it was like, I can't believe there's going to be, like, there's more, and there's more, and there's more. It's like the chidushim and the clarity and the foundational kind of inner workings of life and avoda and how a mensch is, it was beyond. I was like, I can't believe there's 20 more shiurim. Like, how could there be 20 more classes of novel information here?
This is foundational ideas.
It's like too much already. Like, how could there be more? And there's more and more and more.
It's a big job. It's a really big
job.
The
only sefer I know of that has anything to do with Tanya level Yesodis foundation stuff is the Chovos HaLevavos. The Chovos HaLevavos is like a pre-Tanya sefer and wants to achieve the exact same thing in a certain sense that the Tanya, the avoda of the Tanya also, I believe.
But it's not as... I mean, the Tanya pulls on a lot of the Chovos
HaLevavos. The Tanya is more, I think, is more mechanical. The Chovos HaLevavos is more avodative.
Yeah. That's really the point. Wow, you said that amazingly. That this avoider is a real avoider, and it's like, otherwise it's not even like people don't want to do it. It's not, people aren't even aware that there's such an avoider. No one knows that there's such a clarity of Yiddishkeit to be had. It's just not known.
And it happens to be that the clarity that is offered about Yiddishkeit is basically flies in the face of how normative Jewish civilization does Yiddishkeit. it's like at 180 degree.
Well, I don't understand that. Say that again.
The what it's telling you, which
what time is telling you?
Time is telling, and what Chabad Lubavitch is also telling you, it flies in the face, goes completely counter to how Yiddishkeit has.
That's the most disturbing
today. That's is the most practiced by Kim'at without exception, and it's completely a fool.
It's literally. It's really. That's not an exaggeration, and that's been very disturbing for me. And I spoke to this big Talmud Chacham. Again, and the problem is with speaking to Talmidei Chachamim is most people, the bigger they get in their knowledge of Torah, the more closed they become to hearing. I mean, I and it's not their fault. I spoke to this rabbi a few months ago. He's actually Nifta, and in the interim. And I spoke to him a few months ago. Sorry. And I wanted to ask him this question, because could it be... This is basically my question. Could it be that I've invested time into learning this Masorah from Tanya, and it's really, like, the more I learn, just like what you said, the more it seems to contradict how we understand Yiddishkeit in the Haredi world, literally. And I actually asked that to a different guy the way I said that, and he's like, absolutely impossible, no way. And he wouldn't let me... he wouldn't let me speak. I wasn't able to get the words out to give my to give the ideas. But to this other rabbi I spoke to, what did I say to this rabbi? 1 minute.
Another rabbi was open to hear it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So this rabbi was a big... he was in the... When he was Nifta, he was in the Mishpacha magazine. He was a really big Talmud Chacham. He had a massive community in America. He was a Moed Asra, you know, Rav, etc. And I'm talking about... Yeah, I've had a lot of experience with people in my life. Yeah, I might not be a Talmud Chacham, but I definitely know a bit about people. And I was listening to him speak, and I could hear there was no place left for learning with this man. That it was he was finished in that he was done. He knew he was, and I was thinking, like, how could that be? And then I kind of had a time on Hashem. It was like, this man has been, he was like in his 70s, mid-70s, yeah? He's been a Moed Asra for like 50 years. What does that mean? That means that he has been the arbiter of truth for 50 years. He has been the man who has truth, who you go to and ask for truth. For 50 years. What do you expect? What could be expected from a human being? That he could be sitting there listening to a little guy thinking, oh, there's something new to learn? How could you ever expect such a thing from someone? It's just not, it's not possible, Bichlal. So it's like, that's the crazy thing, is that, you know, you've got people who, Peshitta haven't opened this, or won't open the safer, but this isn't the problem. The problem's not opening the safer. The problem is not having access to the Masorah that in a sense has been kind of hijacked is not nice, it's not the right way, but we need to extract the Masorah from Lubavitch. Because Lubavitch, there's this like...
They don't even realize what they have, I don't think.
What?
I don't even think they realize exactly what they have.
A lot, but they are definitely... I've listened to Rav Chase Taub after Rav Manus Friedman. I've studied Rav Chase Taub extensively. I've spent hundreds of hours listening to Rav Chase Taub. I've been through his outside series of classes definitely twice, maybe three times. I also listened to his inside classes all the way through, which was about 80 odd shirim. And this is one of the amazing things of Tanya, a very big thing, is what Tanya does is it creates a tree, a bare tree. That the Tanya 200, in my mind, created a tree, a bare tree, just branches and stuff, yeah? And as you learn more, you have a place to hang information. So your learning becomes exponentially more effective because you've got places to put everything. So you start remembering things that you would never have remembered it otherwise because you've got a filing cabinet to stick it in. You know, that's a really important, that's a very big thing. So now my learning, when I'm learning, you know, I went through the whole Or Chaim, and I'm very kind of like diligent to make sure I take notes and highlight stuff and write down things and whatever, yeah? But a lot of the big Yesodis in the Or Chaim, I remember very clearly now because they have a place to hang in my Tanya tree that gives you a big picture of Yiddishkeit that most people don't have that. You know, that takes a lot of work to build that tree. You're realizing now, Baruch Hashem, I have someone with me who, at least you have a musag now of what kind of investment of time and energy is your hive to. Yeah, see? And you've just begun. You've got at least a musag now of what you need to do.
Well, I feel very ahead of the game because now all of the sichos, you know, all the information, like you can, like the sichos, all that information is... He had that, obviously, clear.
He had that so clear, it was, like, unbelievable.
And so it's now, after, you know, while in the process of learning Tanya, also learning the Sichos, like,
it's all going to come to you. You're in a really interesting position. It's a great, you did it, like, backwards, because really the Lubavitcher Rebbe, in my opinion, is a man who understood Tanya on a level that I don't know if anybody ever understood Tanya. The way I see the Sefer... is I see Sefer Tanya as what the Shulchan Aruch was to Halacha, I see Sefer Tanya as to Hashkafa. And people will scream and shout at me, yeah? But I guarantee you, the only people who will scream and shout at me will be the ones who have no Musak of this Sefer. Even if they've gone through it a couple of times, most of them haven't even gone through it once. But even going through it once isn't really worth much. This is a real like lifetime avoider, it really is. I've spent 20 years now, 20 years involved in this book, and I suppose now there's a little bit of a repose for me is that people have started listening to me a little bit, so people are actually taking my advice. So like you've got Yerachmiel here,
who's actually by that?
What?
Are you shocked by that?
Yeah, that's just a recent thing that's happened. It's just because it's my white beard, but. Yeah, people don't listen to people. I also don't listen to people. Nowadays, I listen much more than I ever used to. But that's a lot of avoider. To listen, you know, who listens to people the least is the people who most need to listen. You know, your kids are the ones who listen to you the least.
They get upset the most. People don't listen to them.
Say again.
And people get upset the most if people don't listen to them.
Yeah, exactly.
But so, I think that the pro of all of this. Is that when Mashiach comes, there won't be really the Haredim won't really be able to say that they had some kind of monopoly on
truth.
Because the normative Haredi society is just as far, basically, if not.
We shouldn't say that. I understand what you're saying.
From the basic Musag of the means and the ends, let's say.
Yeah.
I mean, it's infuriating.
This is another thing. What happens with Tanya as well, when you get very deep into Tanya, I was saying this last night, is Tanya pushes you inside, which is really what Chassidus is. Chassidus is Lefnim Mishur Sadin, which doesn't mean doing more than what you're meant to do. Yeah, it means going in, they translate it going beyond the letter of the law. That is the worst translation of Lifnim Mishur Sadin. It doesn't mean that it doesn't translate like that. Bichlau. Lifnim Mishur Sadin means going inside.
Sounds like the opposite.
The light. Yeah, exactly. Going beyond sounds like going outside. I don't know how they're going with that translation. It means going inside the letter of the law. What does that mean? That means going to the mitzvah, using the mitzvah as a tzinur. To the mitzvah, going through the commandment to the commander. Yeah, that's called having a relationship. So the Tanya forces you, if you're reading it with Bikush and with Hachnar and with Anivus and with Masoira, then the Tanya keeps forcing you into the inner world. And like you were saying, Yerachmiel, is when you start going into the inner world, the outer world starts becoming less, you weren't saying this, but the outer world becomes less of Amanda Amma. And that's what you're talking about, because people don't know that there's... People don't talk about the idea of the person. You've got the character, and then you've got the person. Where do you hear people talk about that? Like, you've got the black of the eye, and you've got the colour, the iris. That's called etzem and shame. So you have a shame, but it's such a shame if the person thinks that that's who the person is. He's the Baal Hashem. You're the one who has a shame. So what are you? Well, you can't really talk about that. You can't talk about that. That's too sacred for words. So what is that? Well, you can't talk about that. But who's... So what are we... Where are we... So that's our relationship with the Rebbeinu Shloim.
The utter.
What?
The utter.
That's the... Well, that's... The utter is the pipe to him. The utter is really the personality. It's like, I'm talking to you. Utter is Ze'ampin, which is, so to speak, the mamutza between us and Hashem, so to speak. So that's like his personality. But when you say utter, you're talking to the person. And this resonates with people so deeply because they know, everyone knows this. Everyone knows that a person is so much more, like, people change. Well, then what, he's not the same person? Well, they'll say, well, no, he's not the same person anymore. No, he is the same person. His name changed, his outlook changed, his emotions changed, his understanding changed. But when you don't know if you don't know that there's a dimensionless being underneath all of that, then you get stared by everything. And that's the same with marriage as well. When you don't realize that your marriage is a binary metzias, that you also can't talk about. The only thing you can say about marriage is yes or no. Are you married or not? How married are you? How married am I? I'm married. Is it a suffix marriage? Well, that's a different thing, because then you're not sure about... That's not a... The metzias of marriage is just a binary metzias. You're married, yes or no. If you're absolutely bound up in that, then you can weather the ups and downs like a hero. Oh, things aren't nice. It's been a year of tsaros with your wife. Yeah? Okay. It's going to turn back up again. A year? You can't weather those kinds of things if you're not absolutely kashur to the etzem marriage. You know what I'm saying? And yourself as well. You have ups and downs and you're going like that the whole time. The more you get connected to that dimensionless, perfect, binary, not part of you, it's not a part of you, it's the you that everything's built on. And that, again, that's what Tanya's pushing you through.
Binary
just means yes or no. You are or you're not.
No.
Yeah, it's just black or white. You exist, you don't exist. Existence is just... Rav Kessin said this, I don't know what this means. You know Rav Kessin?
Mendel or Schmoll?
The guy on YouTube who has comments turned off. What?
There's brothers, there's two of them.
Rav Schmoll. Oh, I don't know. There's a guy I've only seen
one. Talks about politics?
Yeah, that's Rav Mendel.
Oh, okay. So I don't know about...
They're both very much rooted in the Ramchal.
Yeah. So he said something. I don't listen... It's not that I've got anything against him, I just don't listen to him. But I did bump into something, and he said that, but Asid Lavoi, existence will have madrigas. Just a little agav that I heard him say. I was like, wow. Because right now, the point...
Opposite of what you just said.
But that's but Asid Lavoi. Right. Exactly the opposite. The whole point of existence right now is you are or you're not. You exist or you don't exist. A stone and you exist as much as each other, yeah? But he said that in Asid Lavoi, and that really, I don't know how to talk about that, but that, again, that's like a little nugget that will be there. That's Hashem building your, that will come to play. I'll learn something and then that will make me understand how this ties in, and that's how it all works, you know? The Bnei Hashem throws you nuggets of information, or more than nuggets of information, that will be the key to something yes, you'll get yes. later on, and all of a sudden you'll be, if I didn't know that from a year ago, this wouldn't be making any sense to me right now. But this explodes out, and now we just moved into a whole new realm of reality. That's how it goes, over and 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 over again. Mamash. And then you open up the Kisvei Ari. And like I've said this before, but I got told by people, again, who don't know Tanya, I got told by Bibi Dono Tanya that if you don't, I said a flippant statement to somebody after learning through Lakuta Meran. I went through the whole Lakuta Meran. I said to this person, if you don't know Tanya Lakuta Meran, you can't really know Lakuta Meran. And he turned around to me and he said, if you don't know Kisvei Ari, you don't know Tanya. And I didn't know any Kisvei Ari, so I just kind of put my hands up in the air and went, and like kind of, you know, put my tail between my legs and walked off. And then after a few years now of learning Kisvei Ari, the Tanya explodes open the Kisvei Ari, mamash. I'm learning with two people who really know Kabbalah. Yeah, Hashem sent me out of nowhere two rebbes in Kabbalah. I'm learning Ben Ish Chai with Rav Haas, who's like an encyclopedic, just unbelievable, who also knows a lot of Chabad Hasidus as well. And then another friend of mine, who I won't say his name, who's been learning Kabbalah very seriously for like 15 odd years, a very clever guy, and has got a big picture of it. And understanding these in Yad, what was it we learned? Just, was it yesterday? Yeah, 1 minute, let me see if I remember yesterday. It's all the time. We just, what was it yesterday? With the Shvira, the mind goes over. I can't remember exactly. It was something to do with from the Shvira, the fall off of the Acharayim of Abba Ve'ima fell. The Acharayim of Hochma Bina fell in the Shvira. Yeah? And they didn't fall down into Bria. They didn't go down, not the Bria was there yet, but into the place of Bria. They stayed, the Shivrei Kalim of the Acharayim of Abba Ve'ima stayed in Atzilus. They just went lower down into Atzilus. Whereas the Kalim of, it's going to get too chaotic, but once you've got the picture of Tanya, and you've got this idea of Midas and Seichel, yeah, and you see it in yourself, you've got an understanding of what Nahim is. Like, who knows what Netzach Hodesh Yisod Malchus really is, yeah? But when you go deep, it's not really in Tanya, but with the Geras HaKodesh and with the Masorah, you start to realize how it actually works. What is Nahim? Nahim is the emotions that are the lower stage, lower down, more externalized. They are basically emotions, your emotions, now ready and prepared for the other. Once you get ideas like that clear, yeah, when you understand back to back and front to front, like again, we've learned this a bunch of times. Front to front means you're in a relationship, an essential relationship, where I'm not trying to get anything from you. It's about what I can do for you. Yeah, so your relationship with your children is a front to front relationship. You're in it for them. You don't want anything from them. You want for them. Yeah?
And what's wrong with wanting something? I understand. Maybe for a shame. What's wrong with, I'm doing for you, you're doing for me, and we're both doing it for each other. If you're only giving, I mean, I understand when you give, you get. But if you're only giving,
maybe you'll become a shemata.
No.
I mean, what's the problem with only giving? So what's the problem with only giving?
Sometimes it's enjoyable to get.
Let's not get into this conversation right now. We actually had this conversation once before, and I appreciate the question. It's a big question, but you're the reality of who you are is that you were born to give.
Yeah.
Yeah. And giving means that you become similar to Chaim Sholem, and we just need to work out. We need to get things clear, and then you'll realize that you don't actually want to take from anyone or anything in any way, shape, or form.
Right. I think we've discussed this
too. That doesn't mean again. That doesn't mean you become a shmata, because if you're giving your sleep to somebody, then you're preventing giving to other people because you're tired and ratty and whatever, yeah? So you have to, it's a big picture thing.
Yeah.
But the point is that when you understand that a face-to-face relationship means that we're in it, I'm in it for you, you're in it for me, yeah? But I'm exclusively in it for you and you're exclusively in it for me, that's face-to-face. Back-to-back means I'm exclusively in it for me and you're exclusively in it for you, yeah? that Ariza speaks about face-to-face, back-to-back. Like, there's not a page that there isn't, you know, panem al-panem, ach la-ach, ach the panem al-ach, even it hangs over front-to-back and the face hangs over and you see the face from the back. And it's like all of this, yeah? And the Ariza doesn't go, he doesn't explain anything, bichlal. So when you've got, like, the moshul, like you've got your moshul, meaning you've got you. I know how my nahi works. I understand what my hagas is. I understand my chabad. I understand what rotzen is. I understand what my keser is. I understand what oineg is. I understand what panim al panim is. What back to back is. Yeah, I understand what kalim is. I understand what oiris are. And now you've got it all like there. And now you open up the kisvei ari. It's like it's like explosions. Explosions, and I've seen it because I'm learning with people who know Kisvei Ari. I'm like, oh wow, this is this, and they're like, but wow, psh, amazing, you know, and that's so it's like I got taught backwards. Again, you have to be really careful from hearing big. You have to be careful from hearing big. You can be a very big person in Torah, yeah, like you have a huge knowledge of. You know, of Talmud and of Halacha, etc. Yeah, but you could be missing some extremely fundamental ideas in Hashkafa. But what we do, and I suppose quite rightly in a sense, is we will give the keys to that man and not to the other guy who doesn't know so much, which makes sense. But I don't know the answer to the question. You know what I'm saying? So we're having a Hashpa. From people who, not everyone, but it can be that we're getting a hashpa where we're really missing the point, even though that person is a giant. The person's got a giant knowledge in Torah, but he's never opened up the Tanya. And I know it sounds like ridiculous what I'm saying, but only people who don't know Tanya would think it's a ridiculous thing. Everyone that I know who knows Tanya would say the same thing. They say it usually much more strong than I'm saying it, yeah? But it's like, I don't know where to...
A lot of Lidfish don't read Tanya, though.
Yeah, Beshita. Beshita, this is not in certain base Batei Midrashim. Mamash. I've heard people talk about throwing it in the trash and like really like that. And I'm like... I mean, I've been from now for 25 years, yeah? Which means I've read a lot of, you know, as a Baal Tshuva, I've looked at a lot of Svarim, a lot of, you know, much more than a regular FFB guy looks at in regards to Hashkafa and stuff like this, yeah? There's nothing like this little book. But it's got so much bad rap because of Lubavitch and because of people banging it over your head, you know, and this and that. So my whole goal now... This is really the goal of what we're doing with everything, is we've got this seminar, The Blessed Life, yeah? This seminar, The Blessed Life, is just basically to bring you to a level of being a functioning human being, yeah? Then after The Blessed Life, there's Journey to the Selfless Self. That is basically Sefer Tanya with all the language ripped away and with all the main concepts, the way I see them, put down very simply and obviously, yeah? Then after that, there's Towards Tanya, which is a 10-part class going through all of Tanya very quickly. And then Tanya Inside Out. Basically, the goal is to get people into this book. Because I see that once you actually get into this book, which is a very big job, it's not about reading it once or twice, even 10 or 15 or even 20 times. It's not about reading it a lot of times. It's really not about reading it a lot of times. It's about the Masoira. It's about reading it with the Masoira. Once you enter into this Sefer, then the rest of Yiddishkeit, just the doors just fling open in everything. You start loving learning Halacha. You start to love learning Gemara. You start to love Avodas Hashem. You even love doing Tanesim. You can love doing all kinds of Avodas that you would think, like, that's nuts. When you've got the big picture, like I'm learning right now in the bathroom, I'm reading a book by Jordan Peterson, yeah? The 12 More Rules. Know this book?
12 More Rules?
The second one. Right. Read the first one. I'm reading the second one now. It's much wonderful. And he's saying, you know, you're a bricklayer, yeah? Look at the monotony of laying bricks. Day in, day out. Brick after brick after brick. He says, yeah, but you realize... Oh, excuse me. So I thought I'd put my phone on silent. Go away. And leave me alone. It's my parking. So Peterson said, you know, you're laying brick after brick, it's monotonous and terrible and whatever, yeah? But you're building a wall. And then he says, and you know that wall, he says part of something else, but you can say it's part of a shul, yeah, part of a base medrash. You're building a dir b'tachtoinim. Once you put it in perspective now, you realize how your little avoider fits into the big picture. It gives you a life. It brings you back to life. This is what's happened in our door. I think, just the way I see it, is what the Baal Shem Tov came to fight against, and that Yiddishkeit has been taken away from the regular people now, and it's been put in the Bate Midrashim, and the big, you know, there's the big Lamdanim, and then you've got the big Bale Avoida, and because you've got people who are like learning and involved in Torah all day. Well, how can I have any kesher to Yiddishkeit if I'm working as well? You know what I'm saying? It's like that feels like the kind, even if people won't say it like that, that's kind of the undercurrent of, you know, like, you went to work. It's important. Oh, good, you get the mitzvah providing for your family, but
I'm lucky. Providing for their family too.
but you realize it's considered a bidyeved. That is so not Jewish.
Yeah, in Eretz Yisrael.
But that's so off. That's so negative, all of Pirkei Avos, that's so negative everything we know. And then there's a certain rabbi that I'm friends with who is, whatever, he's talking about getting money to this very choshev circle of very frum people. And that's your kesher to Yiddishkeit. You can have a kesher to Yiddishkeit by giving money to these, to a bunch of guys who are learning 24/7. Yeah, but okay, that is a kesher to Yiddishkeit. But you've also got unbelievable access to the Rebbein Shem. You've got just as much access to the Rebbein Shem as these people have. Just as much. So it's like what the Baal Shem Tov came to bring to the world, that there was a big divide between the, you know, the Lamdanim and the Pasha to Yidna Amaratzim. It's happened again. And we're more sophisticated. So we talk about it a little bit more, you know, like covered over. But really that's what's happened. That is that, you know, you get into Shaduchim and you'll see that. I want a boy in learning. Someone who's going to go into learning. You don't want someone working? No. Why? That's where it all comes out. All the real hashkafas that underwrite it. So that was what the Baal Shem Tov came to remedy. And getting Tanya very clear when you understand how everything fits in and what Klipa is and being Mala Klipa, and that's the avoider of the Yid. Well, now all of a sudden it's mamash. You can go back to work and feel mamash givoldik. And that's what I've done now. I've been working very hard for the past 20 years to the point where now I'm not working so much. But not out of a desperation, out of a moving myself in the right direction. Because this safer just flings open these doors that I never saw get open for anything else. Okay. That said, we'll begin our shir. So we wanted to finish chapter 7, where he actually, the Rebbe speaks about Zera Levatola, and this is the only place in Tanya really that he mentions it, Zera Levatola. Like in Likutei Moran, you know, Shmiras HaBris, Tikkun HaBris is spoken about all the time. It's like it's a big yesoid. But Tanya dedicates a teeny bit of room for it at the end of chapter 7. So I'll just give over the idea quickly and then tie it in with the something from the Senach Tzedek.
You scared them off with the topic.
that he says that Zera Levatola is worse than Bias Asuras, than forbidden relationships, in that there's a riboy, a bigger riboy of tumah, okay? A bigger multiplication of tumah. Whereas bias asuras, forbidden relations, are worse because the tumah is held tighter in a very difficult kli to get it out of. okay, which sounds very strange, but the Tema Seder makes it much more.
Well, why don't you just explain what you're talking about? I mean, in practical, physical.
Yeah, so I'll explain. Yeah. So Zera Levatola, there is no kli where the Zera goes to. It's just wasted. Yeah. So that Tuma means that there's nothing containing that Tuma. Yeah. That mashka is the most lifeful liquid there could be, and which means that if it's not used properly, it will cause tuma, yeah, which is what tuma is. That goes, that because it's not being contained, so it just goes and goes and goes, and it creates tremendous problems. Yeah, but that being said, because there's nothing holding it, it's very easy to fix. Very easy to fix. He says all you need to do is say to have a basic harata, that you feel bad that you did it and that you commit to not doing it again. He doesn't say that, but that's what that means. Yeah, even if you do it again, it means you commit to not doing it again. And when you do that, you mean that. And you say Kriya Shema Alamita with Kavana. He says that fixes, that wipes up all the mess, so to speak, and cleans up the whole problem. Yeah. Bias Asuras is different. Bias Asuras, meaning having relations with someone you're not allowed to have relations with, yeah? The Zera goes into a Kli that is, the Zera is held, that Tuma, or Kedusha, which becomes Tuma, is held by a Kli.
Confined.
Like a clam, yeah. So now, there's not a tremendous reboy of Tuma, like when it goes to the floor and therefore it's not contained and it just goes more and more. But to break open that shell, that kli that it went into, that takes a voida. He says that takes a real, that takes a tshuva, what does he call it? Me'umka deliba, me'ava rabba, a tshuva gedoyla, me'umka deliba, real deep, visceral tshuva, yeah? To extract that from the kli.
It's also unfixable sometimes to a certain extent, like the mamzer. You have a mamzer through a biasura, there's no really pulling that back.
So he says exactly that. You're quoting from the Tanna, you're just thinking that. That's exactly what Tanna says. He says, if it becomes a mamzer, if that zera becomes a bustle of a dam in this world, then there is no fixing it. However, I saw from the Rayats, the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, that he said, that I think I understood it. I understood it like this. I think he said this. That if you do real tshuva, yeah, then that mamzer will die. So, yeah, and that will be a tikkun for the mamzer. Either way, that's the mechanics. But that's what the Rebbe says. So the whole derech of Tanya is to not dwell on this. Whereas I know by Breslev, there's a huge dagish on shmiras habris, tikkun habris. And that's two very different approaches to the same inyan. Two very different approaches. But really, again, Rav Nachman says that the tikkun of Zera Levatola is also not particularly crazy. Just say tikkun klali and, you know, have mikvah and have, you know, do tshuva. And that's also, so it's also that they're in, it sounds like they're in agreement with the, you know, with the mechanics. But anyway, so the derech of Tanya is to not put a dagish on Shmiras Habris, and to understand that it's another tiver, and that, like I've said over and over and over again, is that our whole avoida is peeling ourselves away from ourselves. So when we say, I want to look at this, or I want to do that, I'll peel that tiver, you're able to turn around to yourself and say, shut up. Like it's like, you know what it's comparable to when your kid turns around to you and demands a new bike. They've seen this 2,000 shekel electric bike, yeah? And they're not doing very well particularly right now, yeah? And you've got no cheshit to buy them anything, yeah? And they don't deserve anything. And they come to you and they say, Abba, can I get this 2,000 shekel bike? Like, no. Of course you can't. Well, you can get it. I'm not going to pay for it. Yeah, imagine being able to say that to yourself when a tiver pops up. Imagine you come home from work, yeah, you're plutzing and you've already eaten more than enough and you've still got a bunch of cookies that you didn't get to yet and you're like, Imagine just being able to turn around to yourself and laughing at yourself in the same way as you laugh at your kid who wants the bike and saying, stop it. You don't need them. There's no benefit to having them. You're going to wake up late tomorrow morning. You're going to feel horrible. Blah, blah, blah. No benefit. Let go. You know what I'm saying? That's called peeling yourself away from yourself. That's the avoider of Tanya. So once you've done that, that's the Klali avoider. So now Shmiras HaBris is the same thing as Shmiras HaLoshon, which is the same thing as, you know, giving tzedakah, which is the same thing as, not watching YouTube when you should be working. It's all the same thing. You want to watch YouTube? Shut up. So what? That's a big part of Toyas Chabad, is not specifically getting into these different ideas, different pratyas dikka avoiders, and just the peeling yourself away from yourself, which is the way I see it, is just the tikkun haklali. If you can just not take yourself so seriously, well then you've just gone up in everything, in all the avoiders, as we say over and over. Okay, so to get into chapter...
Midwives take themselves very seriously. Jews take themselves very seriously.
Okay.
Yidden take themselves very seriously. William Hasidish also really takes themselves very seriously.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and we also take ourselves seriously. It's... You see how... I mean, the Rambam gives a story. I think the Chovas Levavos brings it. The Rambam brings it of the guy in the ship. You remember the guy in the ship where the guy pees on him? You know the story I'm talking about? From the Chovas Levavos?
I mean, he talks about, like...
That was with Yoshka.
Not caring about what happens to you. Just not, like, somebody pees on you versus somebody giving you a compliment. It doesn't really... It's not Malo Mori.
That's the Indian. This is the Indian. This is the exact Indian.
Is that a joke?
That he hears a story. I don't know. The story was like that, but he was trying to bring out the story to the meaning that you would have a chiyuv maybe to rebuke this man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You might even have a chiyuv to beat him up. I don't know. But what he was trying, what the Rambam was getting to, what you were saying, is this idea of I'm not taking it personally. Imagine that. You can't imagine such a thing. But that he took it to the nth degree, as Chazal always do. He took it to nth degree. But that idea of not taking things personally, when your kid says something to you, insulting, yeah? You have an absolute chiyuv to respond with full force for them. But not because you're angry at them. You with me? And the funny thing is, if you are angry with them, it won't help. It would just make things worse. But if you can, your kid does something absolutely disrespectful, yeah? You go out of the room, you breathe, you work out that you deserve that, yeah? And that why do you deserve respect anyway? Look how you hold yourself, because anyway, your kids wouldn't be disrespectful for you if you're a very respectable person, yeah? Probably. They gave you that disrespect, you're burning with fury, now you go out, you breathe, you realize that you don't really deserve much respect anyway, yeah? And now you go back and you tell them that they're not allowed to speak to their father like that. That's absolutely unacceptable, and however you have to deal with that. But here it's a completely different mindset. It's I'm not now fixing my broken honor. I'm working for the Bnei Shalom. Broken honor? Well, that's not part of my cheshbon. That's the peeling yourself away from yourself. I mean,
it's also recognizing that any uncomfortable thing that happened to you, whether it's your kid doing it or somebody pushing on you, that Hashem did it.
Yeah.
Whether I deserve it or not, Hashem brought this to me. No one else had any power to pee on me. Hashem did this. This is from Hashem. And so it is obviously for my good. And so I'm going to look at it just as much like as a compliment is for my, this is also for my, like, I'm gonna don that this is bad for me and this is good for me, and this is all equally from Hashem.
But that's a different avoid what we're talking about here. That's helpful and it's true, but what we're just talking about is this idea of not taking things personally. And you'll see, the more narcissistic people become, the more, what's the word, offended they are. Always.
But that's
they
all
always
coming
get
because
offended.
They think that people have some kind of power over them.
I'm going to say that it's all bound up with it. It's all bound up. But I'm trying to be mudgish at a certain point, is that the more you can pull yourself away from yourself, and like what you just said, like I said this to somebody the other day and they were so shocked. Yeah, they said, how do you deal with compliments that you don't let it get to your head too much? And I said to this person, well, it's the exact same way as you deal with criticism. If compliments get to your head, then criticism will get under your skin. If criticism gets under your skin, compliments will get to your head. So the avoider is, when people compliment you, don't let it get to your head. However you work it out, yeah? Like, how can you make me feel that I'm worth more? Why does that mean that the way we've managed spun it was unbelievable? He said, when someone gives you a compliment, you know what you should do, where you should be thinking, is you should be marveling at that person. Wow, you've stepped out of your way to try and make me feel good. You're amazing. Imagine that. Someone gives you a compliment, you just marvel at the fact that this person wants to make you feel good. Me? Okay, whatever. Amazing. It's a complete different... That's a very powerful tool, yeah? But if people giving you compliments lifts you up, then people criticizing you pushes you down. It's the same thing that's going on. It's that self part of you that you're taking more seriously, that you haven't peeled yourself away. And part of being a father is that's how it works. Like, look at you guys. How long have you been married for? How are you married?
12 years.
16 years.
16, 10 years. 20. Yeah. How affected do you get now when a cup gets knocked off the table and smashed? Compared to when you were first married. It's the same kind of experience. Well, it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be. Yeah. A kid knocks over a cup. Like I really enjoy the Seder now. Like last year, I got an amazing. This is how it works, hashkacha wise. Yeah, like I realize now from all of my learning that an extremely important part of the Seder is the arbakosis. Yeah, and the fact that you have young children, and the fact that inevitably at least 3 or 4 cups of wine will get knocked over. That's an intrinsic part of the Seder. Chazal set it up like that. They weren't stupid. They knew that you were going to be dealing with knocked over cups of wine. That's annoying. Yeah, wine is annoying. It's sticky. It's red. It's, you know, they were very aware of that. That's part of the puzzle. That's part of the avoider, is dealing with knocked over cups of wine. So I hucked that, yeah? So last year, so I kind of laugh when wine gets knocked over.
So dark in a way, we use white wine because the red might ruin all the dress and everything. It's red.
Yeah, so yeah, so
it was white wine.
But your men use dark red, exactly. So what happened this year? Last year, my kids wanted to paint the house. Yeah, fine. So I don't want to do that anyway. And they did. They painted the house, which is a big balagan. So you've got these nice clean walls. Yeah, and my oldest son. Yeah, who should be leading the example, yeah, 19 years old, you know, we got all the way down to like a baby. He threw something and it hit a glass, I can't remember what it was, it hit a glass of wine. The glass of wine did not spill. The glass of wine exploded on the wall and my mother-in-law. Like, it's still on the wall, I left
it's
it as a
sweet,
reminder.
I love it.
Well, it was beautiful.
Yeah, because the texture of the glass.
Because
the
it was your mother-in-law.
The wall was completely, I mean, it's still there. If you
and
want to come
see
to my house.
Of your mother.
She had wine everywhere. and there was, you know, dark red wine dripping down our new, wasn't white, but just off-white wall. I'm like, that's Givaldic. Oh, Hashem, that's my avoider tonight. I've obviously passed the test of the knocked over cups. So, boys, you've taken me to the next Madrega, and I appreciate that you care about me and that you're trying to, you know, and I appreciate that. And I don't know what's going to happen next year. Hopefully, no one get hurt. But that's the moving over. If you're playing the game, if you're
this
playing the game, what?
This is your mother-in-law.
Because I get on very well with my mom. But this is Rowby speaks about this. This is the game. The way the game is set up is that first you're an infant, yeah, and your whole world is about you exclusively. Then, if you live in Jerusalem, yeah, and you're Haredi, then about five you start to think about other people, yeah. If you're in America, about depends. It could not be ever, but as a young kid in Jerusalem, yeah, you start to think about. But then you have bar mitzvah, b'zvat Hashem, and you become responsible, you know. And then you get married. Now you have to start caring about somebody else. Yeah. Now b'zvat Hashem, you have children. Now you start having to really step outside of yourself, and then you have more children, and then you have to start stepping outside of more, and then maybe you'll have employees, or you'll have tamidim, or whatever, however it works. But the way Hashem set up reality is like when you go, you know, you get to the top of the totem pole, like Rav Chaim Kanievsky sets out. How many times do you think someone sits down in front of him and says, Rebbe, so, you know, how are you doing? How's it going? Can I help? Yeah, you're there exclusively for everybody else. You're not there for yourself bichlal. So the way the actual world is set up, just the dynamics of the world, is if you play the game, yeah, then you will be pulled. You will have yourself peeled away from yourself. And you see that as people get older, generally they become they can become, unless a person doesn't play the game. If a person doesn't play the game, if he refuses to play the game, then it actually works the opposite, and he ends ossifies. He ends up getting more and more connected to self, and then he becomes like an irate, you know,
bitter.
What?
Bitter,
horrible person who's completely self-absorbed. And that happens, that does happen to a lot of people. But the game is just set up that if you're just playing the game, you know, on a you know, just a mildly aware level, you will have yourself peeled away from yourself. And then these things start becoming easier and easier. And you start being able to deal with your children, like the kind of intensity in my house now. Yeah, Bian and I, we have 10 children, yeah? And they're all like very vocal. And you're in my house, yeah? My house is like it's a matzav, yeah?
Yeah.
And I can be sitting there, and just as the personality I am, they're always talking to me when I'm there, yeah? I'll be sitting there sometimes, and I've clocked it at having five people saying Abba and trying to talk to me at the same time. Yeah, and what if I've just come back from a hard day at work or whatever it is, yeah? And I've got the same thing going on. It can drive you mamash crazy. So you have to either you get suffocated by it, or you start working out methods of just processing. Like I can walk into my house now when there's loud, revolting music, like, you know, like whatever kind of music my kids listen to, I don't like at all. And I don't even ask them to turn it off. It just blurs into the background. That's just having played the game for a number of years now, you know? And everything starts to become less important. But really, nothing's becoming less important. What's becoming less important?
You.
It's you. That's really what's happening. Nothing changed. The music is the same intensity. Yeah, it's the same glass that got broken. It's the same crayons that got coloured on the wall. It's the same mirror that got smashed. It's the same kid who's fighting the other kid. Everything's the same. What changed is you, the part of you that gets furious, you don't relate to that part of yourself so much anymore. So you might even be hearing the fury and you'll just be like, no, I'm not buying you the bike. You know what I'm saying? And then eventually, yeah, after not so long, that furious voice starts to lose up a little bit and he stops being furious. And before you know it, you become a person who your family wants to be around.
And you're at the bike store.
And then you know you have somebody to buy your kid the bike. No, that's how I've seen it work. Like that I was, you know, when I was, yeah, as a young father, you know, I hit my children so much. My older children got so many punches. My children now, my young children have, I don't even know if they've ever got. I know that one of them got a punch one time, you know, in a very controlled way. And I, you know how I did it actually for this kid. I said to him, "Listen, what you're doing." To what he was doing, I said, "If you keep doing this, I'm gonna give you a punch, and I don't want to do that." And he did it. He pushed past, and he pushed. So I said, "You're going to get you for that. You're getting three putches, and you're going to get an extra putch for the fact that you've made me give you a putch." And it was so controlled, yeah. And it really helped him. Whereas with my older kids now, when I was still like, you know, just beginning the game, it wasn't like that bichlal. So the only way that you can deal with that kind of, those kind of things is with the practice and having, like we said, having had enough practice. That's how it happens. That is how you peel yourself away from yourself, is learning about it and then practice. And the more you practice, the more opportunities the Rebbeinu Shel Olam will send you to peel yourself away from yourself. And just when you think you've mamash done it, he'll send you a test that you're like, I'm so grateful for this test because I see that you really care and you're really in my life, but that's really hard. Like, you just completed this and this and this, and it's like, that is so godly, the fact that I'm standing at the top of the wall and you just erected a new wall in front of me. That doesn't make any sense. That's mamash hashkacha pratis. And I'm, you know, whether you do it, you don't do whatever it is, but the more you play the game, the more opportunities you have to play the game, and eventually it starts to actually become kind of enjoyable. Imagine that. The actual game becomes enjoyable. Once you've peeled yourself away from yourself enough that you realize this is the game. This is the game. We'll finish. I'll just say what the Rebbe had. The Rebbe describes this in chapter 32. And then we'll finish. As he says, Ki yisoid v'shoresh kol ha-toirahu, the yisoid and the shoresh of the entire Torah. Everyone should be on their seat, the edge of their seats, yeah? Who? Lahagbia, to raise up, la'alois, to raise up, ha-nefesh al-aguf, the nefesh over the goof, meaning the neshama over the nefesh of Bahamas. Yemaila maila ad ikra v'shoresh of the koalmin. The gun, then to bring down whatever. That is the avoider. The avoider is to relate to yourself as a yid, not as a human being. So now when your kid smashes that thing, yeah, that you really cared about, but you know what the game is, it's a whole different metzias. You've actually got a chance. These things that drive you absolutely crazy, those are the most sterling opportunities to just leapfrog higher and higher and higher. And not that you wanted anything for yourself, but that's the avoider, that's the game. And everything changes. And then, like I said, it becomes like already, it's like, oh, I know this one. It's like, I can't believe that this person did this. That's so chutzpahdik. That's like, and then you're like, okay, I understand. Now I need to give them to Chacho. I need to tell them what they've done is completely out of order and they're not allowed to do that and that's terrible, etc. Yeah? I might even have to feign being crazily angry. But this is all just part of the game.
And then your wife says something and then it's all
back to... I didn't put the wife in, but that's the point. She's part of the game. She's the main part of the game. Baruch Hashem. Chazak v'amatz.